Well, that's a suitable Scottish tune to start talking about a restaurant called Bray. Earlier today, Veronica Matheson caught up with Chef Dan Hunter, whose restaurant Bray in rural Victoria has been recently named as one of the world's best restaurants. She asked him about the award and his approach to food.
Now, congratulations on Bray's recent successes and your recent successes.
Thank you.
You seem to be the hot chef of the moment.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, probably against the grain a little bit. Don't have a restaurant in the city and I don't have a TV show. So I think people enjoy seeing cooks and chefs in their restaurants.
I think it's a little bit different. And you must feel pretty good about getting the sort of international award as one of the world's top restaurants.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's look, at the end of the day, restaurants are businesses. We treat them like places of recreation, which they are, but for those of us who own and work in and run them, they're our bread and butter. So anything that brings an awareness to what you do results in people coming to your restaurant from far and wide. So we take what we can get in this industry.
Yeah, so how do you get named as one of the world's top best restaurants?
Oh, look, there's an award, or there's a 50 best and now an extended 51 to 100 list, which has been going for about 10 years now, run by Restaurant Magazine in the UK. And many years ago, it sort of got global recognition as sort of one of the important, global lists for restaurants. Really restaurants of the time, not necessarily. It's a funny thing, like the best restaurant or the most fashionable restaurant or the restaurant that's exciting or it's got a story to tell. All those things sort of rolled into one. But essentially there's about 1,000 people across the world that have an opportunity to vote each year in that award system. And they're tallied up throughout the regions that they exist in. Each region has a chair or a person who manages the voting and the voters in that region. And at the end of the year, they basically tally up who's got the most votes from 1 to 7 and arrange them across the world depending on where you landed. So this year, it's the second year we've appeared on that list, and last year, at the end of the first year of opening, we're 87 on that list, and this year we've moved up to 65. So just meaning that a lot of people are liking what we do at the moment, but also importantly that many people who vote on this list are making the effort to travel to Birragara to eat in the restaurant.
Yeah, so there's a secret diner come to the restaurant?
There's what, sorry?
A secret diner, someone who, you know, you don't know is there to judge your restaurant.
Oh, very much so. I mean, look, with all the different types of reviewing and restaurant guides that exist, I mean, obviously in Australia, the most important guides have sort of been the Fairfax Good Food Guides, which have been state guides, you know, mainly in New South Wales and Victoria over time and now extended. But, and then the national guide being the Gourmet Traveller. And then of more recent times, the Australian has a hot 50 each year. It's been going for several years now. And so, you know, all of those people have reviewing teams that come around to restaurants and appear when you're not expecting them. Someone like Gourmet Traveller or Fairfax may have anywhere between 30 and 60 different people working on their reviewing team. So, of course, over the years you get to know and recognise some of the more senior editorial reviewers on those guides, but there's many who you don't know. So I guess it's just about being at the top of your game as often as you can be, you know.
Yeah, and to go to Bray, I mean, you have to make an effort because it's not in Melbourne. It's about an hour and a half's drive away.
That's right.
So tell me about the restaurant. I mean, what's special about Bray?
Well, it's it's a 30-acre farm. It's a small farmhouse, so to speak. It's on a 30-acre farm in the Otways, and I guess more than anything, we try and cook a cuisine that's reflective of our environment, where we are, how the weather is on the day, representing some of the local supplies in our region, but not necessarily 100%. We do go further afield if we need to, but really, I guess trying to cook a fairly Australian cuisine, which is, I would say, an Australian cuisine is something which has a multicultural background. It uses freely from different cultures, given that we all grew up in Australia with access and to different cultures constantly. We take that for granted. I think a lot of other countries don't quite get that and wonder how we do that without seeming like we're just crossing, you know, cultures when they shouldn't be. But for most of us, for me particularly, I grew up in an Anglo-Australian family, and in my whole life I've always had friends or relatives, or, you know, now through marriage or whatever, a connection with all the many multicultural peoples who exist in Australia. And the food I cook, I guess, is reflective of that. We try and have a strong emphasis on Australian native or Indigenous ingredients that you can't find anywhere else in the world, and something which, I guess, you know, is something interesting for internationals travelling to Australia to consume those foods. And really, it's just a small family business trying to provide some enjoyment for our customers.
And you've got a pretty spectacular setting, haven't you? I think the restaurant's on top of a hill.
Yeah, it's on a little rise. I mean, Bray is means hillside or a slope in an old Scottish language. And when it was settled in the 1860s, this property, it was called Sunny Bray. And then we've just sort of taken the part of that name which we enjoyed, and just to give it some sort of relevance to its location, went with Bray as the name. It's on a hill. It's look, it's a small farm, as I said. We've got around 200 fruit trees on the property, a small citrus orchard included in that, olive grove of 120 trees that we press each year. We've got a vegetable garden of about 3/4 acre under vegetable garden. We've got about 40 chooks running around, which we use for their eggs and also for help us to look after the weeds in the garden. We move them around each week, and yeah, just trying to be fairly self-sufficient, I guess. We make bread each day from flour that we mill on site. We cook that in a wood-fired oven, which we fire off wood from the property. And, you know, even down to things with the dinnerware in the restaurant we use, we work with a Melbourne-based ceramicist and took clay from the dams that we have here and ash from our fire to glaze the plate. So very much a cuisine of place and of time, I guess.
It's a great vision. I gather them that your diners, they ask, you know, where's nearby accommodation? So now you're obliging and you've set up a little hotel.
Yeah, I guess, look, we always had enough. There's enough accommodation locally, within sort of 2 to 15 minutes from the restaurant to pretty much fill the dining room. We operated for the first sort of 2 years with that, you know, that situation, and that was good. But there was nothing really, and there is nothing really in the region or probably anywhere even further afield that matches what we've done. So we've just put in 6 guest suites. We never really wanted to turn the focus to straight hotels. So we just say it's a restaurant with rooms now, and there's the opportunity for 12 diners each night or day to sleep over, and we do a really beautiful breakfast in the morning in the rooms, and they're very quite luxurious and being built with a lot of environmental consideration, built out of recycled materials and running off solar and large 100,000 litre water catchment. There's a worm farm waste treatment facility rather than a septic. And yeah, they're just they're really beautiful, very luxurious, very spacious, beautiful stargazing lights above the bed, and large bathrooms with baths and things like that. So we basically set off to design something, my wife and I, Julianne, that we'd love to stay in ourselves. They're decked out with beautiful book collection and record player and vinyl and a small cocktail bar, and a very nice place for adults to have the night away, really.
Dan, you're amazing. You've got a wonderful vision, and as you say, it's really very close to the earth.
Yeah, thanks, Veronica. It's it is a restaurant, but given that it is a farmhouse and it is in the country, we do try and maintain the concept of it being, you know, when you're away, you're lucky enough to stay at someone's, you know, country property, and all the generosity and hopefully generosity of spirit that goes with that. So most people see that. Most people who dine with us do enjoy that, and obviously, we hope to continue doing so.
And you've been very modest about your own training because, I mean, you've worked at some of the best restaurants around the world, haven't you?
I was lucky enough. I mean, look, trained in Melbourne for 5 or 6 years and then moved to Spain for 4 years. And in that time, I particularly worked in a restaurant called Mugaritz, which is in the north of Spain, near San Sebastian. I worked there for a couple of years. And in my last year there, I was the head chef of that restaurant, working in a kitchen of about 30 staff under me in the kitchen alone, about 20 staff on the floors, a lot of staff to customer ratio. And that's a restaurant which in the last sort of 10 years has been constantly in the sort of top 10 restaurants in the world, as by the guide we were talking about before, yeah. The world's 50 best.
That's right.
I mean, look, it's a funny thing. You know, you can learn so much from training in great places. You learn work ethic more than anything, and hopefully what I took away was certainly an understanding of how to maintain standards. But I think unless you forge your own cuisine and gain your own identity and do that and do something that's recognisably yourself or your own, it's very hard to be distinguished from the pool of restaurants that exist in the world. So, I mean, all of the training that you have, it's useful to then channel that into your own style, and hopefully over time you develop something which people are interested in.
That was Veronica Matheson talking to acclaimed chef Dan Hunter, whose restaurant Bray in Berrigara in regional Victoria was recently judged one of the world's top 100 restaurants.